Studio 360.
Here is this guy performing at one of his campaign rallies last year.
And I'll tell you what, folks, you heard me the other night. I wasn't thinking even about you. I'm thinking about the miners all over this country. We're going to put the miners back to work. We're going to put the miners back to work.
And then this guy, also in 2016, also performing a role as a character campaigning for president in West Virginia.
Gotta love coal. I know you guys have suffered terribly, worse than anyone, and as president, I promise, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure you people work in coal for the rest of your lives.
Alec Baldwin has been channeling Donald Trump on Saturday Night Live since last fall, and earlier this year, he recruited me to collaborate with him on a project writing Trump's fictional first-year presidential memoir, which is just out. It is called You Can't Spell America Without Me. Alec Baldwin, welcome back to Studio 360.
You know, I'm dumb, but I'm no dummy. You know what I'm saying? That's why I hired you. I knew what I needed.
Yeah. We're going to get on to talk about things other than us and doing Trump, but as I was doing it with you, one of the most delightful parts was of doing this thing, You Can't Spell America, was when we'd talk about what Trump might say here, what Trump might do there, you really naturally fall into Donald Trumpism. I mean, it's almost automatic.
When you do Trump and you play it week after week after week, I'll be talking to somebody, and it is bizarre how not a lot, I mean, you don't make a habit of this, you just erupt into this thing. Like, you'll look at somebody and go, I'd like to have the roasted chicken, please. Very well done. Very well done. I want you to roast the shit out of that chicken. You know, and you just burst into that.
Yeah.
It's weird.
By the way, here is a bit that I had not heard until today, a bit from the book of you, the audio version of the book of you as the president.
I wanted to say to the blacks, work will set you free. Work will set you free. Make it a new Trump chant, like lock her up, but positive, like America first. And I said to my team when they got so upset, hey, I'm a very strong believer in hard work. I don't know German. I don't know free fatty Arbuckle or whatever you say it is in German. I never knew German, only my dad, Sieg ist mein, and a few others, but very, very few of the African Americans would know the concentration camp slogan anyway, I'm sure, because I didn't.
Alec Baldwin as President Trump in the audio version of our book.
Free fatty Arbuckle.
It also struck me, thinking about you doing Trump, that while you have done all kinds of characters in film and on TV and stage, some of the greatest and most memorable are these jerks that you've done.
Villains.
Right? Villains of this very American male kind. It's almost like you were preparing for this,
this
your destiny
as been a lead up.
The president.
Yeah.
I think of the magnificent role you had as the character Blake in David Mamet's movie adaptation of his play, Glengarry Glen Ross, 1992. Here's a clip.
Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only. You think I'm fucking with you? I am not fucking with you. I'm here from downtown. I'm here from Mitch and Murray. And I'm here on a mission of mercy.
How awful. Well, you know what I love is that I spoke to Mamet, you know, around the time preparing to do the film, and Mamet said, none of these men are criminals, and they're going to commit a criminal act, and I need this deus ex machina to come in and instigate and to force them to commit a criminal act. In the play—
He doesn't exist.
Well, and it was funny how he said, you know, in the play, which won the Pulitzer Prize, he thought there was something missing. So he decides to go and rewrite his Pulitzer Prize-winning play for the movie. He said, I really felt there was a guy that needed to kind of lean on them. So he created the character of Blake. Mamet writes about predation in the human world. I mean, this is predation. You see in Glengarry, and you see in Oleana, and you see the way people behave that are the real tough dramas. It's ugly.
You played a fabulous jerk boss for 7 years on television, the NBC executive Jack Donaghy on 30 Rock. Here is a clip from early in the show, early in his relationship with Liz Lemon, Tina Fey's character.
Are you familiar with the GE Trivection oven?
I don't cook very much.
Sure. I got you.
New York, third wave feminist, college educated, single and pretending to be happy about it, overscheduled, undersexed. You buy any magazine that says healthy body image on the cover, and every 2 years you take up knitting for a week.
That is dead on.
What, are you going to guess my weight now?
You don't want me to do that.
That was season one.
Yeah,
as you
exactly.
can tell. Yeah, but I don't think he was a jerk.
You don't?
I never thought. No, I thought he was just very clear, and I thought he was very clear.
He was that. He rewatching him last week, preparing for this. I thought, oh, a younger, much smarter, much more focused version of Donald Trump.
Okay.
You know, I mean,
don't think so. I'm glad you think so. I'm glad it triggered some.
You love Jack, I guess.
I love Jack. Well, I think that Trump is malicious. I don't think Jack was malicious. And whenever the malice crept into the script, we took it out of
Trump
there.
Is in a drama. Jack was in a comedy.
Okay. I learned something today.
There you go. Then and now you have incarnated a new jerky boss in your franchise as a baby, boss baby. Here's a clip.
Oh, no. Yeah. I know what you're thinking. Look how helpless he is. Can't even change his own diaper. Well, can't or won't. Diapers are all about power dynamics. I poop, they wipe, bam! I'm the boss. That movie made $500 million worldwide, I'll have you know.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's at another
level. So what, you got 100, 200 of that?
about 175 of it. I mean, it's at another level from Trump and Donaghy and all that stuff. Yeah, that was huge.
You said it in the normal, almost in the normal Alec Baldwin voice. So thinking about the great jerks and villains of cinema, I asked you for a list of performances that you admire, and because of your encyclopedic knowledge of the cinema, you gave about two dozen, and we're going to talk about a few in what I'm calling Baldwin movie classics. It'll be a franchise for us. Louise Fletcher as Nurse Ratched in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Here's to remind our listeners.
Thank you. Excuse me, miss. Do you think it might be possible to turn that music down so maybe a couple of the boys could talk?
That music is for everyone, Mr. McMurphy.
Yeah, I know, but you think we might ease it down a little bit so maybe the boys didn't have to shout? Huh?
What you probably don't realize is that we have a lot of old men on this ward who couldn't hear the music if we turned it lower. That music is all they have.
With Jack Nicholson, of course, as McMurphy. And there, I love the Louise Fletcher's Ratchet because she's being nice.
Yeah. I try to think of women as villains when we talked about this, and that Louise Fletcher character, oh, my God, it's maddening what she does to him.
Yeah. And I met her subsequently. She's a lovely person.
Yeah.
And it was a little like, are you going to scare me, you know, when I met her in Hawaii?
I know. It's like it's like Ted Levine, the actor that played Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs.
It rubs the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
I'd seen Silence of the Lambs. I think I was in my hotel, and I watched it a couple of nights in a row on the hotel pay-per-view. And I was just so flooded with the images from that movie. Then I went to work shooting the movie Prelude to a Kiss in Chicago with Meg Ryan. And the local Chicago makeup artist, her husband came to work one day to visit her, and it was Ted Levine, the actor. And I thought my skin was going to just burst into flames.
There you go. Even people in the business aren't immune from that feeling. Here now is Nicholson as another of your favorites a few years later as the novelist at work being interrupted by his wife in this scene played by Shelley Duvall in The Shining.
Wendy, let me explain something to you. Whenever you come in here and interrupt me, you're breaking my concentration. You're distracting me. And it will then take me time to get back to where I was. Understand?
Yeah.
Fine. And we're gonna make a new rule. Whenever I'm in here, you hear me typing. Whether you don't hear me typing, what the fuck you hear me doing in here, when I'm in here, that means that I am working. That means don't come in. How do you think you can handle that?
So great.
Right? You know, it's funny how to do a good role, the phrase I was always told so you can avoid the judgment, the villainy and jerks and things
Right.
Someone said, you're the negative value in the piece. Don't think about it. You're just, you're there. You're going to play Hitler. That's the old cliche. You're going to play Hitler. You got to give it everything you've got. Yeah. You got to be the best Hitler you can be. You're going to play.
They don't think they're villains.
No, they think they're on to something.
Yeah.
So movies I've played, I thought, well, you want the audience to be excited when that guy expires, when the hero or heroine dispenses with them. And just for the satisfaction of the audience, I mean, no one was more, I'm not going to say mustache twirling, but no one was fuller in their villainy. No one was more soaring in their kind of villainy than Nicholson in that movie.
Well,
was incredible.
The last 15 minutes, especially.
Oh, yeah. But even up to then, even when he's warming up to it. That movie, just to me, is a work of art. I love that movie.
Another one you named, and I wouldn't have thought of this because, of course, you think of Gregory Peck as Atticus Finch. To Kill a Mockingbird, the actor James Anderson is Bob Yule. Here he is.
Yeah, here we go.
Mr. Yule? Captain, I'm real sorry they picked you to defend the nigger that raped Mama Yellow. I don't know why I didn't kill him myself instead of going to the sheriff. Well, it saved you and the sheriff and the taxpayers lots of trouble.
Excuse me, Mr. Yule, I'm very busy.
Hey, Captain, somebody told me just now that they thought that you believed Tom Robinson's story again, Iron.
Again, Iron.
You know what I said? I said you wrong, man. You dead wrong. Miss Finch ain't taking this story against Iron. Well, they was wrong, wasn't it?
I've been appointed to defend Tom Robinson. Now that he's been charged, that's what I intend to do.
You've taken his
story. Excuse me, Mr. Ewell.
What kind of a man are you?
What kind of man are you? You got children of your own.
You got chilling a yawn, he says.
And you were reciting it, which is a beautiful thing to watch. And I loved how, in the writing, I guess it was in the writing, he said, Captain. Hey, Captain.
Captain, yeah. Again on, he said. You're going to take the word of it. You're going to take Tom Robinson again on, he says. That guy, he died early. He was only 48 years old, I believe. He was a very young guy. But he gives one of the greatest performances. I mean, there's so many great performances, obviously, in this film. Mary Badham and Duvall, who doesn't even have a line, and he just crushes you with his acting as Boo Radley, his film debut, Duvall's film debut. But this character of Bob Yule is just one of the worst characters, the most despicable characters.
And he does it so realistically. There's nothing, I mean, that you really think that guy is that guy.
He doesn't back off from it at all. It's thrilling.
Yeah. We can end on a more cheerful note. This is from the producers, your suggestion of the wonderful Zero Mostel as Bialystok. Here he is near the beginning of the film, asking Gene Wilder, as his accountant Bloom, to save him from his malfeasance.
Mr. Bialystok, I've discovered a serious error here in the accounts of your last play.
Well, what?
Well, according to the backers list, you raised $60,000, but the play that you produced only cost $58,000. That's $2,000 unaccounted for.
I went to a Turkish bath. Who cares? The play was a flop. What difference does it make?
What difference does it make? That's fraud. If they found out, you could go to prison.
Who's going
to
find out it's only $2,000, Bloom? Do me a favor. Move a few decimal points around. You can do it. You're an accountant. You're in a noble profession. The word count is part of your title.
That's cheating.
It's not cheating. It's charity. Bloom, look at me. Look at me, Bloom. Bloom, I'm drowning. Other men sail through life. Bialystok has struck a reef. Bloom, I'm going under. I'm being sung by a society that demands success when all I can offer is failure. Bloom.
Bloom.
I'm reaching out to you. Don't send me to prison.
Like Jack, he's a lovable reprobate.
Lovable. Right? No one more lovable than him. But are we going to do honorable mention of all the other ones? We're not going to do that.
Sure, go ahead.
I just want to mention James Mason in The Verdict.
You're not paid to do your best. You're paid to win.
One of the great scenes.
Against Paul Newman.
Against Paul Newman. That scene where he puts the check in Charlotte Rampling's pocketbook. He pays these legal fees that pay for my whiskeys, my darling. Jack Palance and Shane.
Stonewall Jackson was trash himself. Him, Lee, and all the rest of them ribs. You too.
The ending, oh, man.
As the horrible guy who comes to town. And
yeah, when he kills Alicia Cook. We're going to come back to
for being a dirty rat.
When he says, yo, you Reb Jackson Lee, they trash. You trash too, he says. Blows him away. Jack Palance, great. Lee Ermey in Full Metal Jacket, the guy that was the drill sergeant.
What is your major malfunction, numbnuts?
A wonderful performance. Lee J. Cobbin on the waterfront. Lee J. Cobbin
as the union boss.
As the union boss.
We got the fattest piers and the fattest harbor in the world. Everything moves in and out. We take our cut.
He's like, you know, just a lesson in acting. Because a guy that rides the perfect blend of like the kind of forceful and the brutish and the charming and the kind of black-sapping Paul he is. Otto Preminger in Stalag 17.
Well, there'll be two SS men here tomorrow to take you to Berlin.
He's a full-scale Nazi commandant.
Exactly. I think he really didn't have a lot of wiggle room there, you know what I mean?
To kind of don't think of him as bad. He's negative space.
He's the greatest Nazi commandant, the most charming. And of course, Alicia Cook in Maltese Falcon. I love Alicia Cook.
Keep on riding me. They're going to be picking iron out of your liver.
My favorite line Bogart's is when he disarms him. Yeah, you know, like he pulls his coat
over
his head.
He's the bad guy and kills an old lady.
And he's the henchman, yeah. And then Bogart takes the gun away from him. Bogart says, my favorite line goes, that's going to get you in real good with your boss, he says.
Come on, this will put you in solid with your boss.
You are a connoisseur of this.
I love those kinds of movies.
Yeah.
That's why I do a lot of my stuff on TCM.
Alec, thank you.
Hey, listen, I want everybody to know you did a great job on the book. You're going to get a lot of great response for that. It's funny.
And there are dozens of hilarious pictures of you as our president in various realistic-looking presidential spaces. You Can't Spell America Without Me, it's called. The really tremendous inside story of my fantastic first year as President Donald J. Trump. It's out. It's been a pleasure doing that and talking to you here today.
And we got other plans up our sleeve, too, don't we?
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Right after Alec Baldwin left the studio, he called me in a dither because he'd forgotten one of his favorite cinematic villains of all time and wanted to make sure I said it. That is Robert Newton, especially for his performance as Bill Sykes in Oliver Twist, David Lean's 1948 version.
Ill-treating the boys again, eh? You avaricious old fence.